Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Did you know that healthy organizations generate total returns to shareholders 3 times higher than unhealthy organizations? And the biggest culprit to creating an unhealthy organization is stress. Stress creates all sorts of problems. It creates ulcers and it creates angry people in organizations. It's a productivity killer. So why are we not doing more to reduce stress in businesses? Well, Dr. Deborah Lind joins us today, and she talks about her framework that she created called the Mindful Effect. And it's a set of solutions and tools that helps businesses, executives, and employees reduce stress and increase productivity and maximize their profits. So we will learn all about that today. And, you know, the really interesting thing is that she has a way of measuring how much it reduces the stress and how much it can increase the productivity in your business. So that is really kind of cool. So she's going to join us today. So now let's welcome Dr. Deborah Lind.
Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Sarah. How's it going?
It's going great. You combine ancient wisdom with modern science, and you call it mindful solutions. What is that?
You know, that's a really good question. Usually when people ask me what practical mindfulness is and how do you use, you know, ancient wisdom, ancient theories for today, for modern people, what really practical mindfulness is using real-time tools to help people with awareness development. And a lot of the awareness development is rooted in ancient wisdom, such as with Aristotle and Neomachian ethics to, you know, Eastern philosophies to, you know, things here in the United States with Native Americans. And so I've done a lot of work to see where some of these awareness-based practices originated from and how can we use them for today.
And a lot of that, your work comes back to stress and what that does in the workplace, correct?
Yes, everything comes back to stress, right? Everything, that S word.
Yeah, stress is awful. Okay, so what, we all know that stress is so impactful to our body, but what does it do to our body?
You know, that's another really great question. Sometimes I come into organizations and do information sessions based on exactly what is stress. You know, what do we know today that we wish we would have known way back when stress was first being researched. There's 3 key people with stress research. We've got Walter Cannon, who came up with the phrase of, you know, the fight flight. Everyone hears this fight flight response. And then we've got Hans Seeley, who did a lot of experiments on what does stress do to the body? You know, what are some effects that happen with stress? And then we've got Richard Lazarus, who from UC Berkeley came up with experiments in understanding, well, what does stress do to our emotions? So the psychology of stress. And, you know, when we talk about stress today, it's a really, you know, loosely used term, because some people say to me, hey, you know what? I want to keep my stress. It gives me that edge. You know, it's like the trainer who's out there and who has a success story that someone's lost their last 13 pounds. And it was through that rah, rah, rah motivation. For someone else, that might just increase their cortisol levels and their, you know, their adrenals in their body saying, ah, no. So they have a different reaction.
But well, it kind of depends on the level of stress too and what kind it is, right?
Yes. There are different levels of stress. There's, you know, mild stress, moderate stress, chronic stress.
Maybe healthy stress, like when you're playing on a soccer or a hockey team or something and you're in that last, you know, you're behind by 1 goal and it's a 3rd period. That's a stress too, but that's like healthy. I want to go win.
Right.
And that maybe is what people are talking about when they want to keep their edge, where it's something that keeps them going versus you're getting sued by 3 people and your company might get shut down and that's stressful too, but nobody likes that.
Right. Exactly. So one of the complexities about stress is that it exists and that people respond differently to it. And it also has a different meaning for everybody. So if we just take myself, for example, something that might stress me out today might have no effect on me yesterday or might not even have effect on me tomorrow, but it's today. How does it affect me today? One of the ways that stress affects the physical body, meaning it can affect people this way, is through hypertension, ulcers, high blood pressure, depression, and also different types of diseases like diabetes, heart attacks. So chronic stress over time. So stress over time can lead to these physical illnesses.
Well, could it also be all the stomach issues that people are having as well, too?
Yes.
And, you know, it's related to a lot of the food that we eat and things, but that could also be in combination with the stress that's going on in the workplace.
Absolutely. One of the things that a workshop that I do with, it usually happens with gals in the workplace because we're always trying to figure out, you know, how can I make healthy meals that are quick, that I can still eat at work, that still tastes good, that I don't get bored with. And at the same time, I don't want to gain any weight because we all have our thing, right? I mean, for me, I'll admit it. It's red licorice, Australian red licorice.
Oh, I got more than one thing.
I'm stressed. It's like, okay, that's my thing. Luckily enough, I have to drive to a little, you know, candy shop in South Minneapolis to get it. It's not like I can just, you know, truck on down over to Whole Foods in Maple Grove and go grab it. It's a specific licorice. But yes, with food, I mean, people have different coping mechanisms. And one thing, we call it unfavorable coping, whether it's, you know, instead of having one Oreo cookie, it's eating the entire package and then saying, you know what, I still want more. Or late night eating where a person is actually relaxed and then all of a sudden I'm hungry. I'm hungry because I haven't been eating all day. And now that I'm relaxed, guess what? My body is saying, hey, Deborah, you know what? You're hungry, so eat, even though it's 10:30 at night and most people will go ahead and eat. So there are a lot of different unfavorable coping mechanisms that we typically gravitate toward when it comes to how do I deal with my stress.
So what does it do to your body as far as your ability to work and your ability to get things done?
That is a great question. Stress is one of the number one distractors. I saw the word used the other day, interrupter. And yes, stress is a great interrupter. Unfortunately, in the workplace, it is not a positive interrupter. It is something that distracts us and puts people in what I call an infinite loop. So again, going back to that ancient wisdom, if we look at Descartes and his infinite regress argument, stress has the same effect with us. We have a continuous loop. It brings in guilt. It brings in anxiety. It brings in rethinking over and over again the same message. I want to stay focused when I'm at work, but I'm preoccupied by the stuff that's going on in my home life. Then what happens when I'm at home then? People are at home. Then they're preoccupied by, you know what? I've got this whole list of stuff at work that I haven't completed, and I need to get this stuff done. We're on a timeline. My performance is coming up. My performance review is coming up. You know, I'm really nervous about that. So there's all these dynamics going on. And what we do at Mindful Effect is we help people stay in the moment with learning these real-time tools that reduce their stress, and they can re-get themselves focused again while at work. And so they're able to focus strictly on work when they're at work. When they're at home, they're able to leave work at work and focus on their personal life.
And this is a new way of thinking and doing, which is really helping organizations be more effective and efficient. Practical mindfulness, what is it in the way of being a new way of thinking and doing and how that helps organizations?
You know, that's another great question. And early on, what I found was that the tools that are available for people they're not able to access them when they need them. Let's just take, for example, a person who is seeing a psychotherapist for anxiety, for, you know, your buttons are being pushed and triggered. They're in the workplace and they're in a team meeting and their buttons are being pushed. That person can't say, oh, excuse me, I need to take a mindful pause and go call my psychotherapist because guess what? I'm freaking out right here because Jim's pushing my buttons and I just want to lash out at Jim.
I just want to kick him in the butt.
Right. Or you know what?
Somewhere
I can't
else.
Take it anymore. I got to flee this situation.
Exactly.
I just want to get out, right? Yeah,
they shut down and maybe you lose clients or you lose whatever. It could be bad for your business.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I have stories about exactly this, too. Conflict situations where organization was losing business because two employees were doing that volley of pushing buttons. And while there was an awareness of the buttons, there was no control over what can I do?
They couldn't focus on what was more important. Let's take care of this customer or let's finish this particular job. The fight between each other became more important than actually doing their job. And that is very destructive.
Yes. And what actually happens in the brain, going back to that fight, flight, freeze, when two employees are in that volley, that button pushing volley back and forth, that one-upping, and you know what? We do this also in our personal lives. I mean, I see this with couples. How many times have I heard the story of, you know what? I got a great story. Ready to leave my wife. All she does is nag. Talk to the spouse, though, and it's like he totally is disconnected. Him and that phone, you know what? And those games, he's totally disconnected. They did this work, and I call it the aha moment. It's a difference from, you asked about how these are innovative. It's the difference of training the brain and the awareness of knowing, I know the information, and then there's a practice, and it's not practice in the sense of I got to schedule time. It's actually using these tools to develop a new skill. And then what happens is there's an aha moment. And with this one couple I'm referring to, they had date night on Friday, which was, you know, movie night with Netflix. That was their thing. And I got a phone call from this guy on Monday, and he said to me, he's like, you know, there I was, we're doing this again, and I realize I'm not even with her. I'm sitting next to her. I'm not with her. And you know what? I haven't been with her for years. And he said he paused the TV, put the phone in the kitchen, came back. He said, I grabbed my wife's hands and I looked at her and I said, you know what? I can't believe I've been a jerk like this all these years. I have not been present. And I've had the aha moment. And he said to me, I had the aha moment, and that's what this stuff does.
Well, and that's a lot of times what causes that nagging and whatever, but it's, and to their defense, they have a lot of stress and things, which we get to the stress, which checking out and just being internal to yourself is how they deal with their stress, and they have to realize what that's doing to others.
Right. That's another component of this, of the awareness training. It's I'm aware of myself and I understand all my roots and everything. I understand where those came from and I understand whether they're inherited or if they're socially developed, you know, where do they come from? Again, part of that understanding because people really want to know. And then it's okay. Now I have this understanding. So what? So what do I do with it? And yes, the understanding of myself, but then also how does this affect and impact other people, whether it's your spouse, your children, people that you work with. It really is an awareness development training, and it's all evidence-based. And why I say that is because there are times where I'll come in and I know I'm bidding against another company or another consultant. I mean, sometimes we're actually sitting in the same room. It's actually kind of...
Oh, that's awful. Right? I wouldn't want to...
It's like... you know, bidding for wars here.
Maybe that is kind of good. It gets you better quick, doesn't it?
You know, and one of the comments that I've gotten is, okay, you don't look anything like what we thought. I mean, I'm a short person, you know, I've got red hair and, you know, I'm not a, you know, long flowy dress person. I mean, I've had all kinds of comments about, okay, so, you know, who doesn't look like they go here? And, because my background is not in meditation. My background is in the social sciences. My background is in business. Mindful Effect is my second company. Before I started this organization, though, I worked in, you know, business strategy consulting. So I've worked with the C-suite. I've worked with executives through, you know.
So you're a business person who's applying this stuff. And that's what people want, right? I mean, they want to know how to actually improve their business with this. They don't want to just... And that's the problem. They don't want to just mess around. They don't want to waste their time. Nope. If it's not going to help people, I mean, the bottom line, and let's face it, the bottom line and taking care of the problems is what they want to do. And so if you're going to come in and do something fluffy, they don't want that. They want something that's hard hitting and works.
Absolutely. Two things that you just touched on. One is the results. Organizations are willing to invest, but they want the results. Okay. The other thing is they want to know that, are you using the same products? Do you use this stuff? I can't tell you how many times I get asked, and the answer is yes. I use it. My husband uses this stuff. My kids use it. Many times I've been in organizations and they want to know stories. They want to know. So what do you do? You know, I mean, I've got these, you know, executives. I had a meeting last week and the gentleman was one notch down from the president and said, so, you know, what's your stuff? What's your story? You know, why'd you get into this? Tell me, you know, what do you use? What do you do when you're getting hooked and triggered?
Why do you know what you know? Who the heck are you?
Right. So you've got the credential, right? Which is nice because, you know, they want that. And at the same time, they want to know, you know, expose yourself, be vulnerable. Tell me what your story is.
And to be fair, you know, executives get a bunch of crap all day long. They get people trying to sell to them. And you get to a point where you just, okay, are you real or not? Because I don't want to waste my time.
Right. The authenticity component as well as reputation are really, really key. You know, I know both of us live in the Metro Twin Cities area here in Minnesota is really nice. I mean, we're really nice people. When you get into a meeting where we're talking we are nice.
In comparison. Yeah, we are nice, but we have an issue with conflict. And that in the business world, it doesn't always work well because you need to be able to get to the bottom line quickly and move on. And if you're all just so nice to each other, you might not be resolving the problems that are underneath.
You know what? That's a great point, Sarah, because you want to know why? I have a few guidelines when I do work with executives in particular. One is that there's no swearing because it's swearing at me in particular, like you. It's like, okay, my dad was in the Navy and I can handle a lot of colorful language, but when it's directed at me, when I know it's really stuff that we're working on, it can be really, really attacking. But one rule that I do have is that stuff does not get shoved under the rug, because stuff that gets shoved under the rug, what ends up happening with people, again, with this, you know, fight flight response, is people become volcanoes. Then they explode.
Exactly.
It's like the laundry list comes out finally. And that's where things can get destructive. But yes, in the Twin Cities here, we are really super nice. And what I have found, though, working with executives is two things that they really do want. I mean, they want results, but then there's one other, you know, line item that's actually not listed on the balance sheet. And that is the people. There is not a line item for people. I'm not talking salaries. I mean, the value of an individual collectively. And yes, getting back to your point about the deception and, you know, oh, there we can have employee assistance programs that promise to deliver these things. And my thing is, look, you know what? Give me one shot. We'll do one session. If you guys don't think it's of value, you know what? You 30 minutes invested, then I'm out the door. It's all good. But I can guarantee you I have never left. It has always worked into, all right, let's keep going. Let's do this.
Well, you know, I found a stat that said that healthy organizations generate total returns to shareholders that are three times higher than unhealthy organizations. And I think what we're talking about is how to get your organization to a healthy level.
Yes.
And describe what a healthy organization is. I know it's dependent on culture and leadership, but can you tell me what that means?
Absolutely. The first thing I want to focus on is, why does an organization make change? Because really, this is about making a permanent change within an organization that reflects back to the mission and values. If we look at organizations such as Google, you know, Google implements these types of programs already in their company. The caveat is that Google, when they first started, this was already part of the way of thinking. The second type of organization is a company where something happens. And we can look at General Mills and Aetna. Both of those organizations implemented mindful meditation to all their employees, but something had to happen. There was a leader that experienced a personal trauma situation. They used mindful meditation in their with themselves and said, hey, we want to implement this into our organization. The third type of company is leaders that wait for something to happen. And this actually happened to a client of mine where they lost an employee's life.
Oh, geez.
I'm going to wait until something so tragic happens, whether it's my employees are suing me because now they have high blood pressure and they didn't before they got here. That's happening. Or my employees are so distracted that they're at the plant and guess what? There was an explosion and someone lost their life. That happened. Or, you know what, it's costing us so much money and we have all of these other things and we're saying that we have them, but people aren't using them. We need to do something else.
And what are these issues? Like, give an example. Like, is it just maybe you have some senior leaders that have some serious mental issue? I mean, they're kind of a broken person and they're abusive to everyone around them. Or that there's problems with the product and you have really abusive customers towards you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's all sorts of things, but are there other good examples of what can create a unhealthy culture? And, you know,
that's another great question, Sarah. And what ends up happening is that we are a product of an accumulation of lifetime stories, lifetime experiences, lifetime stories. And when I work with kids, it's really cool when you work with kids because, you know, kids are really impressionable and they're extremely direct and honest. And
I want to know how something looks on me, I ask my daughter. She'll tell me.
They tell you all kinds of things. I mean, all kinds of stories, right? There's no filter there. And one kid in second grade said, you know, if you get rid of the cause, you'll have no effect. And for adults, it's understanding the cause, reframing that cause, and also transforming the effect. So yes, within organizations, if there's a person who is, I mean, we all hear the stories, right? We've all heard the stories about the yeller, the screamer, the hot-headed, the temper, the withdrawal person, the passive-aggressive individual, tell you to your face, everything looks great, and then it comes time to do your performance evaluation or a debrief about the project, and there's, a laundry list of, you know, stuff that he didn't like or she didn't like, and you're just now finding out about it. The way that we behave and the way that we respond are ways that we have been taught. So we need to know, where do they come from? Who taught us this stuff? And most importantly, is this representative of who you are today? Is this really who you want to be? And if not, then let's transform this and remodel it. And that's, again, what practical mindfulness is and what we do at Mindful Effect.
And you do that at an organizational level because employees have a hard time dealing with a leader that behaves that way. I mean, that's abusive or it's destructive behavior, and it creates a lot of stress. They don't want to be there. Who wants to be in that situation where, you know, all of a sudden they learn, they think they're doing great, and then all of a sudden at their employee review, they're really an awful employee.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, I'm trying. And, you know, so it's important that you fix those issues so that because it's so destructive. I mean, good employees leave. Right. I mean, honestly, I'd leave. You do one employee review like that with me, I probably won't stick around long.
So here's a real challenge though for folks. I mean, again, talking about real time. So practical means I can use it when I need it. And I just did a 2-day workshop. I had 4 sessions and I had this lady walk up to me and she said, you know, I got to tell you, I can't quit my job. I can't quit. And there were reasons why. I mean, she's got tenure, she's got pension, she's got all this stuff. When she described what her work life is like, her daily work life like with her boss, and she said, I can't change another person. I got to only change myself. I got to work on me. So how can I use this to work on me? Because what happens is that the reality is a lot of people just can't say, okay, you know what? I'm out of here.
Exactly. I mean, I have the luxury of doing that, but and a lot of, you know, some people do, but if you have this situation, you got pensions, you got all these things that are holding you to a job, that is incredible amount of stress.
As well as if the organization is a company that has policies that makes it very, very difficult to terminate the bad apple.
Oh, gosh.
So we're working with a lot of dynamics here.
Yes.
And the cool thing is that people will collectively come together and say, all right, you know what, Deb, we want a workshop for us, just for us. And we all work at different places, but, you know, we've got this commonality, which is I can't quit my job. I got to stay. So can you teach us some things that we can use real time for them to help them in the workplace? And, you know, getting back to stories, I was also a presenter at the American Psychological Association. So I try to, you know, continue to stay connected with my, you know, research peers and wanting to know, okay, so what are other people doing? And I'm on the elevator and I'm on the 33rd floor and there's this guy on the elevator with me. And he said to me, you know what? I got to use your stuff because I can't keep doing what I'm doing. And I said to him, well, what are you doing? And he said, I can't continue to abuse substances. And he said, because I know the direction I'm going in. Get down to the lobby level. You know, he's talking to me. Elevator doors open. And he looks at me and he said, God bless you for the work that you do. You know, when I present and I do workshops, I've had people say to me, how do you do this without having it affect you? Because I couldn't do it if I were you. And for me, it is to continue to do this work because of the people that are being affected, because the people whose lives are being changed, because of the stories that I get, because the phone calls that I get, because of the emails that I get, or the parents that are calling me and talking with me about how they've gone out to dinner for the first time in months with their son and their son hasn't had an outburst in school in over 2 weeks. And the mom can barely talk with me on the phone because she's crying so much saying, I feel like we have our kid back. For the people who thought they were going to get divorced, but now that are happy and they're able to work collectively together like friends again, like partners again. For people at work who, how many times have I heard, if you would have given me $1 million and said, I'll give you $1 million, that those two people will get along because the environment created by these two individuals with conflict created such a toxic environment that it affected everybody from the janitor to the front desk receptionist to the company owners, you know, to come in and do a workshop and how it affects so many different people personally in their work life. I mean, this is really my mission. This is what I do.
And it, you know, gets to the point where sometimes these are the most important things that you're dealing with, because you can, you know, you have to make money to support your family and to, you know, pay your mortgage and all those other things. But at the end of the day, these are the things that are really the most important, right? I mean, this is what really affects your life.
Yes, absolutely. And to piggyback on that, you know, people have said, you know, that phrase, is it the career that finds you or do you find the career? You know, I firmly believe that the career finds you because I am a survivor of chronic stress from childhood trauma. And I mean, I started studying self-help books when I was in elementary school. I mean, I was even trying to think, somebody asked me, I was trying to think back to the first book that I bought. And I still have magazine articles, you know, that are in my basement of stuff from the early 80s and my exploration with this and wanting to know what is available, what can we do to help ourselves? What can we do to make a difference? And someone asked me, so, you know, what's your ultimate goal here, you know, with Mindful Effect? What do you want to do? And right now, really, it is all about you. It's all about the person who's listening right now that is resonating with everything that we're talking about, that is saying, you know what? Yeah, I felt like that. I feel broken. I feel like some days, shit, I don't even want to come out of my bed, but I know I have to. I'm a mom who fakes it, you know, whether she's getting Botox injections in her face to make her look like she's, you know, awake or drinking that extra cup of coffee. Or it's this guy who's saying, you know what? Yeah, you know what? I got to keep it together because I'm the rock for my family. Or the executive who's saying, you know what? I don't even know how I'm going to make payroll, but I can't let my employees know that. It's all of those people.
Well, so, yeah. And business people, especially business owners, entrepreneurs, not making payroll every so often, that's something that's a serious issue.
Not making payroll, losing clients, putting everything a bet on one RFP, saying that RFP's got to come through. Or you know what, we're out the door. That is a real life situation, actually, a company that I did a complete organization-wide practical mindfulness intervention. It was everybody from the founder to the CEO all the way down to the receptionist. It was completely, because that was actually their reality.
Well, yeah, and so
they didn't generate any more.
You stock people so that you can get that business in. I mean, it becomes that serious. The problem when it's that serious, these kinds of issues almost, you know, for the leadership, it becomes second priority. You know what I mean? And it's important to understand that at some point people crack under that kind of long-term stress.
Yeah.
And you just can't maintain it. I've been there. I know. I lived that for a while, especially, you know, when I was running my business through the hard recession, depression that we had. I mean, I've been there. I've had to stock a big client to get them to sign a contract. I've never missed payroll, knock on wood, but I know what it's like. I know the stress, and people can't maintain that forever. Yep. You can't. But, you know, organizations now are moving towards a lean organization, you know, where everything's lean.
Yep.
And, you know, I know why people have moved towards a lean, because, you know, I've worked in the country, the big corporations, where it's almost like a country club thing, and there's probably 100 extra people in a 105-person organization. You know, I mean, it's bad. There's a lot of bureaucracies that are like that. But, you know, to counteract that, they move to this lean thing, but they don't necessarily figure out it's not efficient. They just cut people and that is a common problem in a lot of organizations right now.
Yep. And you touched on it right when you said they haven't figured it out. And so a lot of these different practices that keep coming up, you know, there's that phrase, it's the flavor of the day. You know, I mean, how many executives have bookshelves of books that, oh yeah, I read that and put it on the shelf, or, oh yeah, we're going to try this and we're going to try that. All of these behaviors go back to that reaction. The reaction, the fight, flight, freeze. It's your knee-jerk reaction. Whether a person's knee-jerk reaction is to fight, I'm going to try this. Or it's to freeze, I have no freaking idea what we're going to do. We got to do something. Don't know the options, can't see them yet. Or it's the flee. Yeah, we did that. Guess what? Throw that out the door. Okay, someone's got to come up with something. These are all reactions. And without the awareness component of, again, understanding what is it that we want to do? Where are we going? Who are we? Who am I? How did I get here? What's my story? Because everyone's got a story. Everyone has a story. Every person has a story. When that awareness is developed and executives harness in on it, I'll tell you what happens. People have said, I cannot believe that we did that. Oh my gosh, how embarrassing. And it's, you know, and what's interesting though, is they always get the smile, you know, the gleam in the eye, and it becomes what I call brown the turkey button moment. We all have those. We all have the, I cannot believe, and I'm not talking about 1980s here where we used Aquanet and someone found it and posted it on Facebook. I'm talking about the practice that organizations did, the way that they behaved, the strategy they bought into and now have the understanding, the awareness of what were we thinking. And for me, when I come in in the organization, the leaders, they do have that, again, aha awareness moment. And I say, okay, now you just had a brown the turkey moment. And there's a story about the brown the turkey button. But anyway, we won't get into that. It's another one of those awareness that I said, all right, I'm going to use this one because it can resonate with people. And after that awareness happens, though, it's like, okay, now we can move on. Now what's the response versus the reaction?
Well, you do leadership workshops. Who do you target that to?
The leadership workshops are typically owners of a business. If it's an entrepreneurial startup, it's usually the founder and then also their key team, the top team. Within a larger organization, it's usually the C-suite and an executive. So I'll be asked to come in and do, whether they're having an annual retreat or a development workshop, to come in. If it's an international company, I've been asked to, you know, come in and do a half day or one day workshop for, you know, executives within departments, divisions that are coming together internationally because they're going to only be there for a short period of time. A lot of those programs we have off-the-shelf ways to do it, and then also custom, because sometimes organizations want to measure different variables. You know, so for us, when we show the return on investment for what's the, you know, bang for the buck with these programs, sometimes companies want us to measure different things. And so we modify our variables to what the needs are of the company.
So do you come in and you actually take original measurements and then post measurements on how the performance is based on how you know, your tools and things are working in the organization?
Yes.
That's great.
A real-time stress measurement that I offer to organizations. It literally is a real-time stress measurement. So we'll take a measurement beforehand, before we even start the workshop, so people get their individual results. One of the things I like to do is keep things confidential. So I'll give an aggregate of, you know, everyone's measurements together without pointing out, you know, specific individuals for the C-suite who wants the report at the end with the debrief session. But each person gets to see, okay, what is my stress like? And then we evaluate that and do a correlation with performance. And so at the end, because people always want to know what my progress is, right? I mean, one of the things that I find really interesting is that people want to know, how do I compare to others? But I still want to focus on myself, which is great. But I still have that need to know, am I doing good? Am I doing better than somebody else? Am I doing worse than someone else? How am I doing? And so we do provide people those real-time measurements too. Absolutely.
Well, do you have a way to tie it to performance in the company? Have you worked, I know executives ask this all the time, probably, how do we tie this to how this is helping us perform better? Are our customers happier? You know, those kinds of things.
Yep, absolutely. And again, going back to the leader in the organization, some projects that we've done have been specifically, you know, getting ready for product rollout and did we come under budget with our internal costs. But yes, there are other measurements as far as, you know, customer satisfaction, increase in new business, sustainability with existing customer base, increase of business with existing customer base. So yes, we do those measurements also and provide that proof to the leaders.
Well, that's what I love is that you're very business oriented. It's not, and I think executives will like, you know, they'll attach to that, because there's a big difference between going into an organization and just talking about these things and going into an organization with the idea of helping it become more profitable, you know, and you know, not everything isn't about money. We want to help people become, you know, healthier, but it all ties to profits. It all ties to doing better. It all ties to being more competitive, and having a culture that can just go kick butt is a healthier culture. It's rewarding, and you thrive in those cultures that are just dynamic and you feel good. And then you can come home and you can treat your spouse better. You don't abuse your children, right? I mean, right. You work on other problems that are important for our communities. But, you know, you have a quote that's in, I don't know if I saw it on your website or some of your slides, it says, healthy organizations support cultures where people have influence and control over decisions that affect them. Now, how much of this is, you know, people can take this too far and they say, okay, people need to make all the decisions. What does that really mean with, you know, cause, so people don't take one extreme or the other? How do you implement this in an organization that's healthy and still productive for a corporation to move forward and be competitive?
Absolutely. So that quote really comes back to, again, the awareness of self, you know, going back to, you know, who am I? What are my roots? What are my buttons? Where'd they come from? And when I talk with people, especially because this component of control comes up, I can't control this, I can't control that. And that's usually another place where the conversation starts to come in and provide workshops and assistance for organizations. And I always come back and say to people, what's the one thing that you can control? So one thing you can control. You can control yourself. You can control your reactions. You can control your emotions. And what I mean by that is, it's not like, okay, I am so in, you know, far in anxiety that, no, I can't control. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, taking a moment instead of reacting and kicking the dog to say, okay, what's really going on here? What is really going on here? And is my reaction going to be a reaction, or am I going to respond in a way that is really reflective of what I am and who I am and what I'm trying to achieve.
Because so if you go with your first emotion, which might be that swell of anger, you know,
yep.
I tend to be, I could get kind of aggressive. And one thing I've had to work on is to really control that anger, you know, if something gets messed up, just to get angry, is to control that and say, okay, how do we fix this? How do we deal with this in a much more productive way so that we can get something accomplished? And you feel better about it because you're not half an hour, not half an hour, like the next day you're not upset with yourself because you dealt with the problem wrong, right?
There's none of the residual of guilt and regret. One of the things in one of our advanced workshops that we do is we actually, so it's a two-step process. So first we figure out, okay, so, you know, what's our initial reaction? You know, again, the fight, flight, freeze. Where did it come from? What's our immediate reaction? And then how do we take that, whether it's anger or anxiety or depression, and how do we take each one of those components and grow something from it? And it's based off of traumatic growth concepts. So people are able to take that energy of, I am so angry, I am so frustrated, I have so much anxiety, oh my gosh, I have so much depression, I have no idea. And they're able to take that and transform it into, you know what, I have a response, I'm moving forward, and look what I just did.
Well, how do you deal with that chemical reaction, right? Because, you know, sometimes when you're angry, let's say, you know, my ears would turn all red and my face is red and I'm just sitting there, you know, and they say just diffuse and don't do anything for 24 hours, but you don't have that luxury. No. You know, if somebody's depressed, they might have that chemical reaction and they just want to go to sleep. You know, I mean, there's something, right. How do you deal with that chemical?
Yeah, we have a few different types of training workshops, again, that specifically are targeted for this exact topic. One of the things that we start off with is to discuss, you know, what is resilience? Because right now, resilience is another hot word that's out there. And when I ask people, what do you think that means? Most of the time, what people say to me is things like, blow it off, deal with it, let it go, right?
Yeah, just deal with it.
Just deal with it.
You want to kick the crap out of that person, just deal with it. Right.
Exactly. And blow it off. And resilience socially means to blow it off. Technically, yeah. Resilience means the ability to bounce back. If we envision like a rubber band, for example, and we stretch it out and then we let it go, that's resilience, my ability to bounce back. However, there's a however about this. However, over time with that same rubber band, stretching it out, letting it go, stretching out, it becomes damaged. Mm-hmm. It becomes damaged.
And that's the chronic stress thing that we're talking about.
Yes, that's exactly what happens with us. We can be restored. We can be restored, and we can figure out a way through using different types of practical mindfulness tools, which method works well for me, which tool works well for me. That's why we innovate so many different ones, because not everybody likes to eat pizza every day, for example. And maybe when I'm driving, I can use one technique, but when I'm with my kids and we're at Target and they're bugging me because they want that Lego set, which, you know, they've got a whole big, huge Rubbermaid container filled of, you know, Legos, but they're bugging me for this one. Maybe I need to use a different technique. And that's other feedback that we've gotten from people too, is that they've used different tools in different places. And again, it's when they need it in real-time results versus, oh my gosh, I have to schedule this time. There isn't any scheduling time with this stuff. It's not a practice. This is not yoga. This is not meditation. No one needs to schedule time on their, you know, iPhone to say, ooh, I'm going to take 10 minutes today and do this stuff. We train in a workshop to develop the skills. And the cool thing about it is people will ask, ooh, what if I don't remember how to do it? They remember how to do it because we work with different neuroscience and psychology concepts that implement these within the memory. And so it's not about, do I need to know how to do this again? Am I remembering it? It's already there for you to use.
And I think once you work together with the people that you have to work together and you all realize what it is that you're dealing with, it becomes easier to deal with it, right? I mean, when you know what the triggers are of your coworkers, right? Is that wrong?
Right, because everybody has, No, that's absolutely correct. Another workshop that I recently did, we focused a little bit more on this because this group of people, they were really interested in understanding, okay, well, I know me and I want to know also everybody else's story, but what does that exactly mean? And it means, yes, to use these same concepts with, you know, knowing your neighbor. You know, again, going back to Neo-Machian ethics, I mean, this stuff is ancient stuff, but being used in a modern way. And so, you know, another story that comes to my mind right now is two other employees. You know, this was a group that was getting ready for Fashion Week in New York. I'm talking major sabotage here. I'm talking, what the hell happened to my fabrics? I don't know.
Oh, jeez. The drama behind the fashion shows.
It's real. And the consequences, though, the stuff doesn't get out on the runway. So you've got a designer who's, now this is not going to happen. This cannot happen. This is our collection, right?
Oh, the designer's ready. And see, now that's a stress moment for the designer. The designer's angry and ready to just, you know,
fire people.
Yep.
And yet going through this process of understanding, okay, what's my stuff? What are my triggers, my buttons? Understanding those, using some of these tools, and then having an awareness of what actually happened in the case of these two guys. The one guy recognized the other guy was stressed and said, hey, you know what? How about if I finish this for you and why don't you go do that stuff that we learned, remember? This is a story they're telling me. And this guy said, I got your back.
Again. That's great. You help each other out because then you know that different people, and they'll help you out if you help them out. And it's just that's the healthy culture that we're talking about.
That's exactly what ended up happening, because the flip side of it was there was a media interview and the other person was nervous about it because he had a bad experience with media interview. And the other guy who said, you know, I got your back, he just said, hey, you know what? Everything is good. Everything's okay. Let's do this together. When I got the feedback about this situation, what I was told was you could have heard a pin drop, because everyone from the designer to the models, the makeup team, everybody
couldn't believe it.
Cannot believe it.
But think of the tone they set, and think of how much they helped. They were leaders in that organization at that point, because when people saw that work, it probably had a profound effect on others.
Yep,
and a wonderful modeling behavior.
Yeah, modeling the behavior.
That's awesome. That's a great story. So how can people learn more about you? And if they want to do some of your workshops or bring you into their organization, you know, their leadership group and help them just run better, how do they get hold of you? And do you work all over the country as well?
I do. Yes.
Okay, that's important.
Yes. And you know what? I have to say, selfishly, as a working mom, when I do have out of state clients, especially if it's on a weekly basis, so I'm flying out, you know, usually Sunday night and then coming back in the middle of the week, it amplifies the appreciation for mom. So, cause I've had people say to me, oh my gosh, how do you do this with kids and traveling? And oh my gosh, what does that do for your home life? And, it really amplifies again, the appreciation for my kids.
And maybe your spouse.
Yes, of course. I usually get the, I missed your cooking. I love you. It's good to have you home. I wasn't able to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when my baby, my youngest one, she's going to be a freshman in high school now, but she, when she was a baby, my husband had to be in Texas all week, every week. And as soon as he came home, I would just hand the baby to him. Here you go. It's your job now.
So
that's your husband to you.
Ben there. Yes.
It really is a partnership.
Yes, it is. People can reach me through our website at themindfuleffect.com. They can also send me an email at Debra@themindfuleffect.com. And fill out our contact form, or they can contact me through telephone. That number is 763-360-7073.
Okay. And I'll have your information on my webpage and also on my website. So my radio page and website. So this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
So if you want to learn more about the Mindful Effect and how to reduce stress personally or within your organization, go to my website to view all of Dr. Deborah Lynn's contact information at www.sarahwestall.com. And make sure you go and like my Facebook page. I just launched my Facebook page, and I'd really like to have it have more likes than 50 because nobody knows about it. So if you could go there and like my page, I'd really appreciate it. And also, if you have any opportunities, go to my website and make some comments. I'd like to hear what you think about the show, and I'd like to hear feedback on what other kinds of topics that you would like to hear. So for now, have a wonderful day.